So your colour changed a bit later on. Mm. And you're probably wondering what they would drink. So they would actually have warmed alcoholic drinks like we have now, but the one that was really popular was called Lamb's Wool. And that was made of ale or cider, roasted crab apples, cream and spices.
Mm.
So
gosh,
when you kind of heated it all up, the crab apples will kind of burst open. You know, like a roasted apple and it kind of goes all fluffy. That's why it was called a lamb's wool.
Lamb's wool, all right.
What surprises me is because when you put cream, you know, it's like that old joke you do where they mix whiskey or something with, so you mix fruit with Baileys, would it not go, when mix a cider with the cream, would it not all curdle?
I would have thought it would have curdled, but maybe they've got a special way of doing it.
Well, they were so tiddly they didn't care.
They probably age it late enough.
Not to bother. Yes.
And people would go around wassailing. And wassail or wassail actually means to be whole in Anglo-Saxon or good health. To be whole or of good health.
Yes.
Good health. So if you're in a city, then you would go round house to house and you would actually sing songs and you'd expect alms in return. It's so a bit like carol singing.
Carol singing.
In the country, they would go to the apple trees and sprinkle them with the wassail. And the idea, they'd also sing a song, but the idea was to try and have a good harvest for next year.
Bless the crop. Yeah.
I'll do that.
We've got a brand new orchard in Enfield and they wassail there.
Oh, cool. So I thought I'd do, I'm not going to sing, but I'm going to give you a couple of lines from the song where they were standing outside your door. I don't know what the tune is, actually, I have to say. Also, we do fill with apples and with spice. Then grant us your goodwill to taste here once or twice of our wassail. But here they let us stand, all freezing in the cold. Good master gives command to enter and be bold with our wassail. So that's what you did. There's quite a few extra lines, but I thought I'd just give you a flavour. But I could take the whole session if I did the whole thing. And then basically when you got into the house, then you'd then change your song. And it says, much joy to this hall, with us entered in, our master first of all, we hope now begin, of our wassail. And after his good wife, our spice bowl we try, the Lord prolong your life, good fortune we espy, for our wassail. And then after you've given the alms, so the food or the drink, and you'd have to drink from the wassail cup as well. It is our noble part to bear a liberal mind. God bless our master's heart, for here we comfort find with our wassail. And now we must be gone to seek our more good cheer. With bounty we'll be shown, as we have found it here with our wassail. So
they go around every house.
Yeah,
saying
every
we
house
everything.
And sung a song for a long time.
My golly.
They probably got very drunk after
yes.
that.
Yes. They wouldn't know how cold the weather was or anything, would they?
Here we come a-wobbling through. Yeah.
They sound quite good fun.
Yes.
And Tudor presents, so 16th and 17th presents actually were food gifts generally.
Oh, yeah.
So if you went around someone's house and you had this big meal, then you'd have to bring a present to say thank you.
Yes.
So you could bring, if you're a worker, like a servant or an apprentice, you might bring things like baskets of fruit, so apples or goose eggs, and actually capons, which were the male male chickens. They would actually be the most frequent gifts that you'd give. And Samuel Pepys, the diarist, who wrote in the 17th century, he said that in 1663 he had received a swan as a gift.
Oh, yeah.
And basically he had it in a pie the following evening. Mm. So, poor swan. Off he went.
I suppose you'd have to go a long way now to get swan. I suppose you wouldn't be able to get it here.
No, because they all belong to the
Queen. They all
queen.
Belong to
the
Queen. She might, yes.
So let's go forward in time now. We're leaving the hall and we're going to the parlour of 1665, which is our second room. So in between our first room and our second room, Christmas had been banned. So basically, there was an Act of Parliament that was passed in 1644, and it basically they banned Christmas until 1660. So it was nearly 20 years.
On what basis did they ban it?
So basically, when Oliver Cromwell came in and Charles I had been beheaded, He was a Puritan, and Puritans basically thought that Christmas was an excuse for insobriety, gluttony, gambling, and it was too much of a papist tradition, so they decided that they should get rid of it. So there was a Puritan called Philip Stubb, and he wrote about the Puritans' view of Christmas, and he said, "More mischief is that time committed than in all the year besides. What dicing and carding, what eating and drinking, what banqueting and feasting is then used to the great dishonour of God and the impoverishing of the realm." So he thought it was just awful that they're having so much fun. So at that time, you couldn't really show that you were celebrating Christmas. You might do it in small groups. You might kind of do it in secret, but you couldn't go to church on Christmas Day. The shops had to stay open. You couldn't put decorations up, so the evergreens, you couldn't put those on your door. But when Christmas was kind of brought back again in 1660, and this room is from 1665, basically Christmas was not the same as it had been prior to the ban. It got a sort of bit more sedate than it had done before. So the room, our room, room two, shows the Christmas display of a Christmas Day scene. And the head of the household has invited his family, friends and members of the church he attends back to the house. So they will spend the afternoon listening to music played on the viol and the recorder, dancing, eating and drinking, and later they will go later in the evening they'll go back to another service at the church. So the room is decorated with a few sprigs of holly and bay behind the paintings, and there's a wreath made of bay and rosemary that hangs above the fireplace. But basically, do you remember I said in the first room we had that great big swag of the evergreens that was above the fireplace? There's nothing like that in this room. It's just only kind of little sprigs here and there, so it's not quite the same. So as I said, this room dates from 1665, and the Stuart kings have come and gone, and the Civil War has passed. And now William and Mary are on the English throne.
Ah, William and Mary.
And much of London has changed. So London is transforming from an overcrowded, disease-ridden medieval jumble into a modern metropolis. And large areas of the city have been rebuilt after the Great Fire of London in 1666. And London is now the largest city in Europe. So it's quite a big city. So this room represents a parlour on the first floor of a townhouse. And three windows overlook the street. And the housing of the middling sort at this time that were rebuilt after the fire had a parlour and a dining room. So they didn't have this great big one space that had everything in. It was separated now. The room looks slightly lighter than the one we've just talked about. And like the last room, it has panelling. And rather than being in oak, it's in a soft wood that's been painted in beige, a beige colour known as stone. And the individual panels are also larger and much plainer in their design. The light wooden floor is uncovered, so we haven't got that big rush mat that we had in the first room. And there are three large sash windows in the far wall overlooking the street below. And just before, the curtains are made of a simple green cloth. So parlours and dining rooms were more private spaces, and it was just more like the family would gather with guests to eat their meals, rather than everyone all together. So it was a bit less kind of hustle bustle and a bit quiet. So, let's talk about Christmas. So in the left-hand corner of the back wall of the room, in front of the sash windows, there is a table which is covered in a crisp white linen cloth. On the table, there are three pewter tankards for drinking punch. A large ceramic punch bowl, two pewter plates, one with olives and the other with anchovies, and two clay pipes with a single pewter candlestick. Placed in a semicircle next to the table are four cane chairs. One has a recorder on, and the other one has a viol leaning up against it.
Oh, how lovely!
So you're probably thinking that that kind of this Christmas scene seems kind of not as raucous, and we haven't got as much food. But the food they did have on the pewter plates were the anchovies and the olives. And to us, kind of olives seem quite a sort of quite a modern day food to eat. But actually, people have been eating olives and anchovies from Elizabeth I's reign in 1603. So olives were from Greece and anchovies from the Mediterranean. And if anyone wants an olive, I have a black olive that you can try just to get a taste of
sweet salt
this time. Yes.
Can I just share quickly a few William and Mary facts?
Go, you do that and I'll pass around the olive. Vanessa, would you like
just
to
a few? William was 5'5". 22 seconds. And Mary was 6'1".
Wow. I love that fact.
Mary suffered terrible asthma. So the stairs at Hampton Court Palace, in the wing that they decorated, the stairs are very slight. So
I'll put one on your.
Yes, remind me of Spain. Thank you.
Louise, do you like